Welcome to Agora Sports Network. My name is Carrie Tollefson, a member of the 2004 Olympic team running the 1500 meters. In addition, I'm a wife, a mother of three kids under the age of 14, a weekly podcast host of See Tolly Run, and a commentator and analyst for such news outlets as ESPN2 and NBC. And if that's not enough, I'm your host today, interviewing fellow Olympian and fellow Minnesotan, Buzz Schneider. Buzz is a hockey legend. He was a member of the 1976 Olympic hockey team and the 1980 Olympic hockey team that won a gold medal. Buzz had a remarkable career that reached its pinnacle when he played a crucial role in the Miracle on Ice game, where the underdog U.S. team defeated the heavily favored Soviet Union team. To this day, this victory remains as one of the most iconic moments in sports history. So let's journey together. Buzz, thanks for coming on the show today. This is such an honor to get to chat with you.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here with you as well.
Yeah, we don't live very far apart.
No, that's good.
We're only about, 20 minutes away. Isn't that what you say in the Twin Cities? Everything's about 20 minutes away?
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit. We are going to dive right into your Olympics experience, and then we're going to work backwards.
Okay.
So we want to hear a little bit about, just first and foremost, what's your first memory of the Olympic Games?
The Olympic Games, awesome. I think it's incredible to be a part of and to wear the USA jersey, to represent your country. I don't think there's anything better. I mean, it's awesome. And the lifetimes and the people you meet and the athletes you meet last a lifetime.
Yeah, 76 and 80.
Yeah, all we had to do was tie the West Germans in 76. We would have won a bronze. But luckily, I was lucky enough to hang around for four more years and play in 80. So that redeemed ourselves. So it was great.
And you rocked it in the in 1980. I mean, everyone who knows your name knows that you just peaked at the right time.
Exactly. Exactly. It was fun.
You know, and I think about the Olympic Games for me. I mean, it was such an honor to put the USA on my chest. And the older I get, the more I think, like, do you have the tattoo, Buzz?
No, I don't have any tattoo.
Do you want to go with me? We can go get them together. I don't have them yet either.
As long as you're buying.
I often think of that, though. You know, there's very few moments in my life that I really remember putting on a jersey that meant, or anything that meant so much to me. Probably my wedding dress meant a little bit more, but you know, that jersey, that's something about it, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, to represent your country, I think that's one of the greatest honors you can have as an athlete in international competition. And the guys that I played with, they're still my best friends today and something I'll cherish forever. There's no doubt about it.
I love that you still get together with those guys.
Yep. And you know what's funny? Nobody's changed. Everybody acts like they're 19 and 20 years old again. So the emails are the most childish things you ever want to read. But it's fun.
Yeah. There's still a lot of competition between you all?
Oh, a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're all older, grayer, and balder, and heavier.
Yeah.
And, all that good stuff that comes from old age.
Do you still play?
No, I haven't played in the last couple of years.
Okay.
I played at a fantasy camp we still have every year up to Lake Placid, our Olympic team. And about 16 of us guys come back, and I was out there playing, and it was just an easy game and stuff. And I tried to catch this one guy who was coming into me, and I backed up into the boards, and I kind of fractured a couple of ribs, so that ended my playing career. But it was fun.
Yeah.
I go out once in a while. I go out every year. I go to the outside rink up here at Northern Shoreview, and I go out and monkey around with the kids. Once a year, I do that. And it was funny. The last year, I was up there, and I was with these kids, and they saw me. They say, hey, do you want to come play with us? I said, sure. They had no clue who I was, but it was fun.
My dad was not you, Buzz, but he was a great athlete. They'd come knock on our door and say, Mr. Tollefson, would you come down? And we lived a half a block from our skating rink, and he loved it. That's so important. You know, being an Olympian and being a professional athlete is pretty spectacular. What are some of the things that you remember most about being a world-class athlete? And you know, what have you taken with you throughout life? Like just all those life lessons that you learned?
You know, I think it was a competition. You know, I grew up in a small town, and everybody played every sport back when I was growing up. Either played football, hockey, baseball, basketball, and it was the competition. And, you know, I played well enough that I ended up getting a scholarship at Minnesota. But what I remember the most about is the guys I competed against, even on opposing teams.
Yeah.
We even got to be good friends, like with Trechak, the Russian goalie. He's probably the best goalie in the world at that time. And I remember I got a hat trick against him. We turned out to be pretty good friends, even though we beat him in 80. He didn't talk to me for a while afterwards. But But it was the friendships I made, the camaraderie. I miss the guys. I don't miss the game so much. It's the camaraderie with the guys and joking around and the friendships I made with them and us other competitors getting together, even with families and stuff. It's pretty special, I think.
Yeah.
There's like a bond between athletes, no matter what sport you play. I think you have something in common and it's almost like a family, and that's what I miss the most.
It is. I love, though, that you just had to, sneak in, that you got a hat trick against him.
Yeah. I was like, yes, sir. Well, when I got it back in 75 World Tournament, when we played the Russians in the World Tournament in Munich and Dusseldorf, I guess I'm still the second person to ever get a hat trick against him, in international competition. So it was fun, and I turned out to be friends with him. He's a good guy, a classy guy.
What was some of your favorite memories of the Olympic Games besides like the miracle on ice and like that whole hoopla? Like, what were some of your favorite times spent there?
I think with some of the favorite times, and most of us guys, I think we felt pretty much the same way. Our parents, since it was in this country, had the opportunity to see us participate in the game. My wife was there. There was three of us on the team that were married. I was there and watched. Mm-hmm. And it was the total experience. And I even had fun watching Eric Heiden win a couple gold medals right next to the hockey rink up there in Lake Placid, the Herb Brooks Arena. And to watch the other athletes and everybody living together out at the Olympic Village, which was actually a prison at that time, the gate around it, but we stayed in mobile homes. But it was a total experience looking back at it. The other athletes from other countries, our team, Herb Brooks had us so focused on the game. That was not our priority there, but it was just everything looking back at it now. But it's being Olympics, it's a special opportunity, and any chance to go, I strongly encourage go for it.
So you guys stayed in mobile homes. They had mobile homes for everybody?
But they were nice mobile homes.
Yeah.
Typical mobile homes. They were mobile homes, but they're really nice.
That's kind of cool. And those were kind of like the hip thing at that time, too.
Exactly. And the Russians, they stayed in the prisons, which was kind of nice. They complained about, but I don't blame them. But
yeah,
they took good care of the U.S. athletes at the village and stuff. And they had events out there. I think some singers, I can't remember who came and sang. And it was fun.
Yeah. Do you remember the opening ceremonies?
Oh, yeah. The opening ceremony. It was cold. It was really cold. And it was actually... the opening ceremony was after we played our first game already. We played the Swedes the night before. Then they had the opening ceremony, which was special. But what was funny about it is in a late class, when we played the Swedes before the opening ceremony, there was hardly anybody in the stands. But after the opening ceremony, boy, the stadium was just packed.
So loud in there.
Yeah.
Can you hear it still?
Yeah. You know, I played in two Olympics, but 5 or 6 international world championships. But in Lake Placid, that's the first time I've ever heard the chant USA, USA. I know in previous competitions, we go over to the Swedes and the Finns and we'd be chanting their country and stuff. And I really never heard it until Lake Placid. And that was, I'll never forget that. And boy, that really rings my mind for sure.
Do you still smell the smell of hockey pads?
No, I
all the gear?
But the bathroom, the locker room, the practice and stuff, that's what I miss.
I know. I do too. I miss that. I miss like the smell of cut fresh grass on a cross country course or, those kind of things. And I can still get that. I can get out there and go for a run or a walk and still kind of get that. When did you know hockey was going to be your sport? Because, I mean, there's 2-year-olds that are out on the ice, already. And especially here in Minnesota or in, God's country, like they like to say, where it gets cold and everyone puts a hockey stick in your hand.
Well, like I said, I grew up in I played baseball and hockey and football, but I was good. I was actually recruited at the University of Minnesota to play both baseball and both hockey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when baseball was on, I loved baseball. When the hockey was season on, I loved hockey. But I think the defining moment is after 1974. My first year at Minnesota, I was on the first line at the University of Minnesota. In baseball, I was on the JV. But the second year, we won the national championship, first one ever for the University of Minnesota, out in Boston. And after that, I was the youngest guy, I was asked to play in the World Championships in Lublin at World B Tournament. And that's the same time baseball was on. So it was either go to Europe and play the U.S. or come back, stay and play baseball. But I said, I'm going to Europe playing hockey. So that made the decision.
It all worked out.
Yeah, that was the best decision I've ever made. Of course.
What was it like when you played for Herb at the U of M?
Herb was great. I was in his first recruiting class. That tells you how old I am, I guess. But I was with five other Minnesotans, and to play with him was, God, he was the best coach I've ever played for. Oh. He was an awesome guy. He was one of the only coaches that I've ever played with that's never made a mistake behind the bench. Best bench coach I've ever was with. I mean, he was consumed with it. It was hockey 24/7 on his mind all the time. And I loved to play for him. He loved to win. He was innovative, and I just loved playing for him.
Yeah.
But he was tough, though, but he was tough. A man of his word, which was great.
When you say tough, though, like, what kind of tough was he? I mean, we kind of got to see a little sneak peek, but, you know, we don't really know what he was like. Yeah.
He wasn't vicious or anything like that.
Yeah.
He was, the rules were the rules, and his way was kind of how we were going to do things. And he expected you to rise to those standards, but he treated everybody the same. So it wasn't just you personally, that was the whole team. But I liked how innovative he was. He changed how we kind of played hockey, at least when I played for him at the University of Minnesota till we went into the Olympics. Interchanging positions, more like the Europeans on offense, but we still had that North American back checking and, you know, play the zones. But on offense, we could weave, and that was fun.
You tried different things.
Exactly. Exactly.
Kept you on your toes. That wanted,
yep. So, exactly right.
When you transitioned to playing at the Olympic level and with all these other athletes from around the country that you hadn't played with at the U, was he a different coach then?
Well, he was tough. I mean, the boys from out East, they couldn't figure him out right away. He wasn't the kind of guy that you could cuddle up next to and talk about your problems and stuff like this, your family problems or whatever.
Sure.
It wasn't one of those kind of guys. He treated everybody the same, but I kind of did that by design, so he didn't show any favoritism at all.
Yep. Yep.
But we were well conditioned. He worked his heart.
Okay. I mean,
there was no question about it. And, you know, the legs feed the wolves, who were in great shape, interchanging positions. And it took us a while, but we got to Masber pretty goddamn good. And it was fun to play that way. And we knew what we expect from your line mates and teammates, and trying to make it easier for them, but to help yourself. And that old saying, you can do your own thing within the framework of the team, was kind of how it went, I would say.
Yeah. What was that training like at your peak? Was it, you know, two-a-days, land, like, what were you doing? I mean, can you kind of tell us one of your hardest days of practice?
Well, I think that what we hated the most, Herbie liked those leaded vests sometimes, those 10-pound weights. And then after the practice on Lake Placid, we started at two-a-days, went to the one-a-days. But after the practice, we'd have to take some of the guys, we have to walk up that hill to the hotel. And God, it was tough walking up without a vest. But
sure.
Putting the vest on, it was hard. But I would say that's probably the best conditions they've ever been in their life. But we worked. He pushed us to the max.
Yeah.
Made us learn how to take that extra step.
When you think now of the sport and how it's changed so much, I mean, even like hydration, nutrition, like the weights, all that stuff. What did you guys do? Because I had coaches that were maybe a little bit younger, but, you know, they used to have a Coke and Snickers. Like that was they replenished with some carbs and some, you know, sugars and their salt. But they didn't have all the sports drinks and the fueling. How did you guys do that?
He had this guy, this off-ice trainer, Jack Blatherwick. He was got his PhD at the University of Minnesota. He was very innovative, looking at how the Russians trained. And he was really into the off-ice training. So we did the off-ice training. And then we got on the ice with the ice. And Jack Blatherwick got involved in the aerobic and anaerobic, the sprint deals on and off to change how we played and stuff. But as far as nutrition, you know, as long as we took care of ourselves and stuff, it wasn't like it is now, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, we weren't walking around with water bottles all the time.
No. That's all we had, that and Gatorade.
I know, right? Exactly. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Don Pablo Coffee. If you're interested in quality coffee, fresh to order, roasted in small batches in the timeless Latin American traditions of roasting, then Don Pablo Coffee is for you. Check them out at donpablocoffee.com and use the promo code AGORA at checkout for additional savings off your first order. So let's talk a little bit about Miracle on Ice, that phrase. Like, what does that mean to you? Do you think of it every single day?
Yeah, well, if you don't, people remind you. I mean,
yeah.
I remember when Jack McCart was on the 1960 gold medal Olympic team. They won the gold medal back in 1960. And after we won it in 1980, Jack told me, he said, Buzz, believe this or not, he said, your life will never be the same. And I wasn't sure what he meant by that. But what's amazing is how many years this has went on and the legs it has. The movie gave us legs and stuff to continue it on. But I never thought it'd last this long.
Yeah.
But it's I don't know. It's just unbelievable.
It's really cool. Your son played you in the movie.
Yes, he did. And I always say he made more money in the movie than I did.
I love it.
He ended up joining SAG. And what we did is we just got one lump sum and it divided amongst 20 guys. And he got in the SAG deal. So every quarter he gets checks. I'm in a position.
That's hilarious. So you have two sons?
I have two sons. Billy, who played me in the movie. He went to the University of Minnesota, played baseball until he blew out his back. And then I had another son that played hockey. He went as far as junior hockey. And now he's a tech op for Delta Airlines.
Oh, awesome. What was it like being a dad after being such a recognizable Olympian? I mean, that's a lot. And then to have two boys to follow suit is, you know, I have three children and my daughter's getting asked all the time, are you going to run like your mom? And she loves to run, but it can be a lot for the kids.
I think so. And that's one thing, like, well, my wife, we never put any pressure on our kids to play, to play any sports or just be involved in something, whether it's music, to be involved. Actually, like Billy, he was probably a better baseball player than hockey. So he chose baseball and the other one played hockey. But we never put any pressure on our kids at all. And we never really got in the way and just supported them. And my kids were growing up. It wasn't me. I was just a regular dad. They, you know, like everybody else, they were more interested in Neil Broughton and Pete Christian and Mike Ramsey. That's where their idols. They'd rather see them than me.
Yeah.
Which was fine. That's great, I think.
But did you throw, like, I throw the ball super hard at my kids. You know, like, I think that I want to play hard with them because my dad played hard with me. My mom talked the game with me in a way that wasn't pressure, but they didn't shy away from that with me. Were you out there like bumping them on the ice?
Well, yeah. And I used to throw the balls to my kids hard too. So you're not alone.
Good. I like that.
What if they're going to play that way? I mean, you teach them how I played, I guess. I don't know. That's the only way I know how to do it, I guess. But once in a while they ask, but I never really got in the way. And they ask me sometimes, what about this? And I tell them what I thought.
Right.
You know, it's up to them to do it themselves. So
yeah.
But
you said that you were a multi-sport athlete, and I grew up in a small town too, like you. I love that you have other passions and you did other things, even though you really focused on one sport for a long time. What would you tell moms and dads, parents of young athletes now, when there's so many people that are just focusing on one sport now?
You know, it's gotten so organized nowadays. It's really changed, but I'm looking back when I grew up, the stuff that I learned the most is like when I'm on the outside ranks, playing with your friends and stuff, you can try different things and do different things that you don't normally do that you don't get in an hour practice or whatever.
Yeah.
So this works for me, this doesn't work for me. And I like that idea. And I also like the idea of playing different sports as well, because you can apply it to your own sport that you're already playing. So I think that's a plus too. And it gives you a variety. And so you're just not stuck in one box.
Yeah.
So that's the advice I'd give. If they could play other sports and it doesn't get in the way, but that's pretty tough to do nowadays because these sports are going full year round now. But you got to kind of pick and choose your way up to figure out how to get there, I guess.
Yeah. How old were you when you started sports?
I think I started skating like I was 4 years old.
You were four. You were young.
Yeah, younger. Boy, up northern Minnesota, not much to do in the wintertime. Ice fish or ski or...
I know. That's what is so fun. I mean, sometimes in those small towns, you need to do those things in order to make teams.
Exactly. And everybody was involved in something up there, and that was your social life. And everybody picked their own path, I guess.
Yeah.
Fun.
You know, mental health is a big thing right now with sports. And for a long time, we didn't really talk about it. We just sort of tried to, you know, put our nose down and work even harder and kind of stay quiet. But now people are actually telling people when they're hurting or talking to other people, talking to sports psychiatrists. How did you guys deal with that back in the day?
Boy, you know, like you said, back, nobody talked about it like they do now. It's, you know, we used to joke around. Back then they called it a thick head, but it really wasn't. I mean, there's issues. And we lost one of our teammates, Mark Pavlich, to suicide. So, you know, there's help out there. And I think people should strongly get it if they need it. And, you know, nobody's immune. It's a disease like everything else, but you can certainly be treated and be helped. But I think that's something that should be looked at as well. And that's an important step, I think, to all athletes. And there's a lot of pressure, not you know, both men and women. So it's not an easy thing to overcome. And boy, if you need help, I suggest go get help.
Well, and that's what I think, too, on the flip side, that without sport, I think I would have been a little bit more blue than, you know, every time I could go to practice or could go for a run or whatever, I always came back a little bit more, I don't know if it was happy or if I just had a little more pep in my step, but I just love that sport gave that to me.
Yep. And I don't know, maybe it's those endorphins. I felt the same way. It was fun. When you're out there playing, I mean, you don't think about anything else. You're just so in love playing, doing your thing and stuff. Yeah. It's a great therapy, I guess.
Buzz, what was it like when you scored, I mean, not one, but like five goals at the Olympics?
I had a great Olympics. I mean, that was fun. That's a good way to top off my action career, I would say. But our line was really hot. That whole Olympics, I think we top scoring line and played with Mark Pavlich. And I God, he was great. Just like youth hockey. He said, Buzz, don't worry. You just get in front of that net and I'll put it on your stick. And I go, okay. I mean, that's so simple, but it worked. And John Harrington was also from the range. So we had three guys from the range who kind of grew up playing the same way. So It was really special. And the oldest guy on the team was a good way to end my career, I guess, after I played professionally in Switzerland for a few years. So,
but being the underdogs, I think that's always interesting too. Like being an underdog, how do you believe that it could be your time?
You know, we were seeded seventh going into the Olympics, but Herbie started the whole year. He worked us up to that level. We were, you know, interchanging because we're playing a different system that we normally would play. Like I said, it took us a while for it to kick in, but once it kicked in, it was worked and it was fun. Puck control. And even during the Olympics, I mean, he set us up against the Russians. He mentioned the Russians. They're not sharp like they used to be. They're lethargic, changing lines. They want everything there is to win. They're not like they used to be. So he set that carrot out there for us to chase a little bit.
Huh.
But going into the Olympics, we were actually looking for third, the bronze. But after we tied Sweden 1-1 in the game, probably should have won that one. But then the next night, two days later, we ended up playing the Czechs and beating them 7-2. And we considered them probably to be the second or first best team in the world, along with the Swedes and the Russians. So we knew we were onto a medal better than bronze after we beat the Czechs. But it was after we beat the Russians, into the locker room, there were the sticks coming in. We were signing them and stuff. And there was telegrams all over the walls. And Herbie comes in and just knocks the sticks off the table. He said, you guys haven't won anything yet. And we went out, we practiced one of the hardest practices we had in the Olympics.
Right after that game?
After that game, yeah.
Mm.
He made sure our heads didn't get too big.
Yep.
He had us prepped for that whole tournament. And I'll tell you, the night before the finished game, I don't think too many guys slept. We just wanted to go out there, win, get it done with, and go home.
I could listen to that all day. I mean, even hearing how coach was, like, you know, there's something about not going too hard on kids, but also having that like grit to just tell your kids, tell your athletes to get out there and get their heads in the game.
Oh yeah. He told us, and we're behind the fence. He said, if you lose this or blow this one, he said, you'll take it to your effing grave. And he meant it. Herbie never swore. I never heard him swear, but he said that, boy, we go, whoops.
You remember it.
Yeah. Sure.
That's pretty awesome.
He was forcing us to win. He was helping us.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. You know, if you could give a little bit more advice to parents and youth out there, what would you say now? If you could go back a little bit and think of your career, what would you tell kids to keep doing or to maybe change?
No, number one, obviously you love it and it's fun. You put all the eggs in one basket and you play and you go with what you got. And there's so many things different nowadays with the money and the travel. But I still believe in, you know, the cream always comes to the top, no matter how you orchestrate the maze. So I think it's do what you're doing, be smart about what's going on, and don't let other people dictate exactly how to play your sport or do what you have to do. It's tough. I mean, it's not easy to be an athlete nowadays, I think, but there's so much money involved. It's sure changed. That's for sure. Everybody's looking for that extra edge, and you can't blame them for that.
Instinctual, I think, is something that sometimes we lose sight of when you are, like you are, Buzz, so good at your craft. And sometimes I think that we forget to use our instincts out there. Coaches need to remind athletes to use that as well.
Exactly. You know, after you played enough, you know, like one of my coaches said, if you make mistakes enough, you learn from them and you go on from there and you just hope you never make them again. So you keep eliminating mistakes, you keep getting better and better. And a lot of it is instinctive too. Uh-huh. So once you pick it up, it's your instincts helps you go a long ways. That's for sure.
When it didn't work for you, what, like back in the day when you had your family and you went home, that first conversation after talking to your coach, what were those conversations like? How were you raised?
Well, probably like you in a small town, when I played on the hockey team, no one ever got cut, really. I mean, yeah. It wasn't like it is now. But I think when you start playing other teams from other towns, you start comparing yourself to them and wanting to win and stuff. And once you figure out how to score and how to win and stuff, you kind of stay with that a little bit until you keep getting better and better. So, you know, my parents, you know, they said, if you're going to commit to something, you're committed. Don't, mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. It's, you're either all in or you're not in. And you do the best you can. You can go so far with what God gave you. And like they say, you can only squeeze so much toothpaste out of a toothpaste tube. That's where I kind of learned. I mean, from playing with older kids and I have some great coaches and stuff. So my coaches were great role models. I still respect them nowadays. My hockey coach, he's 91 years old now. And he grew up in Minnesota, played with Johnny Mayasich from Eveleth and Alba State High School team. So I learned a lot from him. And he was like a god, but he was also a mentor and my teacher and a coach, and always my best friend.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. I really love that when coaches can stay in your life, because they are more than just a coach. They really are. I have to ask you what it was like to light the torch. Because was it in 2002?
In Salt Lake.
Yeah, Salt Lake.
I was actually nervous because we had to crawl up these stairs in the dark and hopefully you don't stumble on stage. And the guys used to joke to Mike Rizzita, "Don't worry, Mike, if you stumble or fall, we'll light it for you."
Oh,
but that was a wonderful experience, and to do it with the other 19 other guys and stuff, it was special. And we didn't really know we were going to light the torch, I think, until 2:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning before that day that they lit the torch, because of security, I guess. That was pretty special, and that we each got a replica torch.
Is it still fun to say or to hear Olympian?
It is, and I remember this one. He always called athletes from another sport the Olympian. And that Olympian, that means something special. I mean, you to represent your country and to be in the top internationally, it's pretty neat, and it's a good club to be involved in.
Yeah. Well, Buzz, it has been an honor. I have one last question. Sure. If you could pick anybody else to be interviewed, any other Olympian, young or old, who would you want? What's a cool story out there that you would like to hear?
I would say if I picked another, I would have to be Johnny Mayasich from Eveleth, kind of a godfather of next to John Mariucci of hockey in Minnesota. Probably one of the greatest Americans to ever play that never played in the NHL.
Okay.
I think he's a pretty special man. He's 90 some years old and he still curls. He's still involved in hockey in Minnesota. He's a godfather.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I appreciate you, all the advice that you've given, and just thanks for being such a great role model all these years. It's been really fun to watch you and watch the Miracle on Ice over and over. It never gets old.
And you too. I had fun watching you.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Agora Sports Network, a community that connects and unites Olympians to positively impact amateur sports in the U.S. This podcast, hosted by me, Carrie Tollefson, a member of the 2004 Summer Olympic team, is an engaging series where past and present Olympians share their experiences, challenges, and lessons learned. Our goal? To inform and inspire youth, high school, and college athletes and their families. Join us as we positively impact the world of youth sports. Join us next week as we chat with Ellie St. Pierre. This American record holder and Olympian is on the comeback trail after having her first child. In this episode, we hear how she grew up and how she hopes to raise her own family. Until next time, get outside, get active, and share in our love of sport. Visit us online at agorasportsnetwork.com. Subscribe to our email list to be the first to know about Agora news and to get exclusive content. Let's journey together.